Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Our next guest is one of my favorites. He's also one of America's most celebrated fiction writers, as well as an acclaimed screenwriter and memoirist. The New York Times Book Review has called Richard Russo one of the best novelists around. He is the author of 8 novels, including Mohawk, That Old Cape Magic, and Empire Falls, for which he received the 2002 Pulitzer Prize for Fiction. His new novel, Everybody's Fool, is a sequel to his novel Nobody's Fool, which was made into a 1994 film starring Paul Newman. In Everybody's Fool, Russo revisits the upstate New York setting and characters of the highly praised Nobody's Fool. Rick will be speaking at the New York State Writers Institute on Friday night at 8 o'clock. He'll be at the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts tomorrow night, and it is a great pleasure to welcome back Rick Russo to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. Always good to have you on the program.
Joe, it's great to be here.
Well, thank you. Congratulations on another beautiful, wonderful novel. I thank you so much. This is quite a piece of work. At what point did you think to yourself that you could go the sequel route?
Well, that's all Howard Frank Mosier's fault.
What did Howard get you into?
Howard and I are pals, and we don't see each other as much as we would like, but we're always exchanging emails, and Howard sends me news clippings from his local police log that he thinks I'll be interested in. over the last 15 or 20 years, he's paid me the great compliment whenever he sees me. He'll say, "What's up with Sully and Rub?" You know, as if they're real people, and I would know. I never had much news to tell him until, you know, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. Somebody had told me a wonderful story about a guy who'd climbed up into a tree with a chainsaw and sawed off the limb that he was sitting on. And then realized after he lowered the chainsaw down with the limb gone, with his back to the trunk of the tree, he couldn't get down. And I thought that's something Rub Squeers would do, you know, from Nobody's Fool. And so when I saw Howard, I told him that story as if it were a Rub story, and as if Rub were alive and this had happened to him. And I don't know, something clicked, and I thought, well, you know, I've never done this before. I've never written a sequel, but maybe this is, you know, it was just fun to think about Rub again and Sully and all those folks. So I decided to go down that path.
Now, the book focuses more on one of the minor characters of that novel and, of course, of the film, and that's Douglas Raymer, who was, in the first book, a police officer who is now the chief of police, who's having a rough time of it.
Yeah, we pick him up in the novel in a cemetery, actually. the whole novel begins in Hilldale Cemetery, and Raymer is there to witness the burial of Judge Barton Flatt, who in the early novel was a thorn, one of many thorns in his side, and has insulted him over the years repeatedly. And he's about to be interred, but as he's there, Raymer is there in this scorchingly hot Memorial Day weekend. What he's most concerned about is the fact that his wife, who died a year ago in a tragic accident, is also buried there in Hilldale. And he has not been there to visit her grave after she was interred, because he has discovered at the time of her death that she was literally about to walk out the door when she has her tragic accident and falls to her death at the bottom of the stairs. And in the meantime, he has picked up, he has discovered in her car a garage door remote that does not open their garage. And he sees this as a sign that well, he knows that she was about to run away with somebody, but he doesn't know exactly who. And that's what sets the narrative ball rolling here in this new book.
I am curious as to the, because I want to just touch on the film for a second, because, of course, Sully was played beautifully, so beautifully by Paul Newman, and Raymer was played by the late Philip Seymour Hoffman. And you are one of the few novelists that I know who is quite proud of the film that was adapted from their novel. But you have great affection for that film.
enormous affection for that film. And, you know, the best testimony to that is that the director who wrote the screenplay as well, Robert Benton, and I have remained really wonderful friends down the years. And we've made three movies together, and we're always looking for something to do. We're working on a project now. So, yeah, I have just enormous, affection for that movie. And I always kid with people about it. You know, they people have always said to me, God, what I love so much about that movie was how faithful it was to the book, which always makes me kind of giggle, because I will sometimes say to them, yeah, except for the two-thirds of it they cut out. And but they're right. It is faithful. It's not faithful, you know, in a kind of literal scene-by-scene way.
Yes.
But it's faithful to the spirit of the book. And Benton understood the nature of Sully, the main character. And God knows, so did Paul Newman. So I think you could do worse, really, than if you wanted to understand what it's like to adapt a novel well to the screen. You could just study Benton's screenplay of that movie, read the novel, watch the film, and you would know how to do that.
When you were writing, I mean, in your mind, of course, these characters, do you think of Sully as Paul Newman, or do you think of Raymer as Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Well, I do now.
Yeah.
You know, actors are often described as owning roles, and I think that there's something really kind of true and literal in that memoir. Or excuse me, in that saying, Paul Newman. Every time I rewatch that movie, you know, I realize again that Paul Newman found things in my dialogue that I didn't know were there until he spoke those lines, and of course Philip. That was a minor role. Philip Seymour Hoffman had a minor role in Nobody's Fool, but he occupied it fully. And then, of course, he was in the HBO miniseries of Empire Falls, where he had a much more substantial and wonderful role. And I felt the same way about him. I will forever now see Charlie Mayne as Philip Seymour Hoffman, and. As I was writing this book, as I was writing Everybody's Fool, of course, when I began it, Hoffman was still alive. And I generally don't write my novels, you know, thinking about actors.
Yeah.
But it was hard not to. And so as I got deeper and deeper into the book, it was Philip that I was seeing, and it was Philip that I was channeling as I was writing. I had no idea whether or not a movie would ever be made of this book, but thinking about Philip in the predicaments that I put Officer, now Chief of Police, Raymer in, was actually helpful to me in writing the story. And when we got the tragic news of Philip's death, I was you know, destroyed like everybody else, but also thinking to myself, you know, what am I going to do now? I'm going to have to banish the thought of this wonderful actor from my mind, because clearly he's not going to be playing Officer Raymer if there is a movie.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just impossible to do. Even then, it was just impossible to get Philip Seymour Hoffman out of my mind as I was writing about Chief Raymer. And finally, I just came to terms with it and said, "Yeah, you know what? That's who it is, alive or dead." That's who's going to be in my mind, in my imagination. And if it is made into a movie, hopefully I'll be lucky enough to get some other great actor who will transform himself as Philip Seymour Hoffman did, and as Paul Newman has done, and as Ed Harris did so wonderfully as Miles Roby, who I didn't see originally when he was originally cast as Miles, as being the person I had described, but he was. And but yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman was a tough loss.
In the writing of this novel, and going back to the sequel, wrote What I find fascinating is this book takes place over 48 hours. It's a very defined period of time. Did you know that from the very beginning, that that's what you wanted it to be?
No, there's a long list of things that I don't know at the beginning of a book, and I didn't know that. But Nobody's Fool, which is kind of a winter's tale, takes place over two long holiday weekends. It takes place basically over Thanksgiving, and then there's a break when Sully goes to jail, and then we pick him up again right at the beginning of the Christmas holidays. So I had that's a book that contains kind of two fairly restricted and contained time frames. And so I thought, and I knew that this was going to be very much a summer story taking place during a heat wave. And I knew, because the whole book is about memory anyway, I was going to start off on Memorial Day weekend. But in my mind, I was thinking at the beginning of the book, all right, so if this book is structured like Nobody's Fool was, then maybe this is a book that will start over Memorial Day weekend and then will end over the 4th of July weekend. But it turned out I just didn't need the 4th of July. And so I just kind of plowed through that 48 hours. And you know, thank heaven we didn't need the 4th of July, because this book is 500 pages in just that 48 hours. If we'd had another 48 hours in there, the book would have been 1,000 pages.
So this is why I think you're a genius. So you're able to go through and write a book that is so intricate, that is so fast moving, and not have it plotted out, not know where you're going. And I believe I think you said in the Wall Street Journal that you were 2/3 of the way through the book and didn't see an ending.
Yeah. No, and that's absolutely true. And this is not the first novel where that's happened. It happened also in Bridge of Sighs. The longer and more complicated the book is, the more resistant its conclusion is likely to be for you. And in this book and in most of my books, I will lose my way for a time. I will make some sort of mistake that obscures my path. I've just learned that that's what happens. The final trick, I think, of every artist, and not just novelists I'm talking about here, but poets, short story writers, filmmakers, I really don't care what the art is that you're engaged in, painting or whatever. I think the final magic, if it can be described that way, the final magic is convincing your audience, your reader, that you knew what you were doing all along. That's the last magic trick. And ultimately, you kind of do discover the ending somehow, some way, under some duress. You discover the ending, and then revision is all about going back and making sure that all the ducks point in the same direction, and convince your reader that you're smarter than you are, and that you knew what you were doing all along, and it was just a matter of time until you arrived there. And of course, that is just almost never the way it is.
So, but at some point, I mean, even when you're pointing those ducks all in the same row and you look back at what you've written, I mean, don't you get signs that even subconsciously you saw it heading in that direction?
Yes. I mean, there are certain mistakes that you make that you now have to cut out. You have to rearrange things that were in one place have to go to another place. And the revision process is for me anyway, is just so long. It takes, you know, every bit as much. It's probably two or three times as long as it is to get that first draft done. Then you go back over and over and over and fine tune and all of that. But you do find signs that as you're doing this, you do find those wonderful signs that somewhere in the back of your mind, you kind of knew subconsciously that this was related to that, which was why it was there to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, and it's at the beginning of the process, you're often as the writer, you're often thinking, why is this even in here? I have no idea why I've gone in this direction, why I've added this character, why I've allowed this to happen to this character. And only at the end does the back of your brain become a little bit clearer to you, the artistic impulses that seem mysterious. Now you kind of say to yourself, okay, that's what that was about. I had no idea. And then you use the front of your brain to make it all to make it seem, you know, inevitable when it was anything but.
Well, it's a beautiful novel. It is out this week. You will be at the Odyssey Bookshop in South Hadley, Massachusetts, tomorrow at 7:00. The event's free, but reservations are required, so you can go to odysseybks.com to find out more information. Odysseybks.com for the event Thursday night. And then on Friday, you'll be here in Albany and speaking at the New York State Writers Institute at 8:00 at Page Hall. And you can just Google New York State Writers Institute and find out more information about that event. The new novel is Everybody's Fool. It's published by Knopf. Rick, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. I look forward to seeing you on Friday, and thank you very much for being with us, as always.
Joe, it's always a joy.
Thank you very much. Talk to you soon. Again, Everybody's Fool is Richard Russo's latest novel. It is out from Knopf. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.